Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, a part of the amazing FBA family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7 figure exit and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader, co-hosted by myself, Michael Veazey, and Jason Miles, top 1% Shopify store owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving e-commerce business, look for The E-commerce Leader on your favorite podcast app and subscribe today. Hello, folks. This is Michael Veazey from the 10K Collective podcast. As you can see somewhere behind me here, which is a subset of the Amazing FBA podcast. Amazing FBA is primarily geared to British sellers, although actually a lot of people from around the world, especially North America, listen. And I think today's episode, we are talking about VAT, and it's a topic that I think everyone across the globe who sells anywhere near the European Union or indeed the UK needs to learn about. It's not a fun topic necessarily, but I would say this before we plunge into this. It's a competitive advantage to understand stuff better than your competition. If your competition buries their head in the sand and you keep your head out of the sand and get expert help, you win. So think of it as a positive thing. So we got Simply VAT experts with us today. We've got Louise Boussmal and Alex Wyatt, originally from France and Canada, respectively, now both living in the UK. It's got a really international angle. In our last episode, we looked at the basics of VAT. What you guys call basics, by the way, I call super advanced. But hey, you know, so definitely, definitely worth listening to. Take your time, go over it. I've got to make copious show notes at 10kcollective.com. Today, Louise, we're going to talk about VAT differences across Europe. So let's plunge into the topic. First question. Obviously, this is a European EU type tax. Is it the same in all the countries across the EU? Have they, as they call it, harmonized it?
Hi, Michael. So thanks for having us. So what's interesting with VAT is that it's supposedly it is a EU-wide tax. It should be treated the same. It should be applied the same across the 27 member states of the EU. The European Commission basically issues directives in the VAT directives, and it's the responsibility of member states to apply these directives accordingly in their national legislations. So yes, VAT should be applied the same in every single member state. However, as we know, in practice, they don't really do that. Member states like to keep doing their own thing, and they like to interpret the directives in their own way and at their own specific requirements.
Yes, the usual EU thing. By the way, just for North Americans listening, or particularly if you're based in the US, when we say state, we don't mean state within a federal structure. We're talking about a sovereign state, i.e. what most people call a country within the European Union, just in case that's a confusing point, because we within the European Union, we have countries like Germany that have federal states, just to really mess with your head. So we're talking about different countries, right? So they are not the same. So let's talk about the differences then. What are the places where we end up with differences despite the alleged idea of being the same or similar?
Absolutely. So one of the main differences, for example, if we start from the beginning, would be the VAT registrations processes. They differ from one country to another in terms of the paperwork that you might need, the translations you might need, whether you need a certified translation or you can just do it yourself on Google. So the paperwork, but also the length of time that you need to get a VAT number through. So again, as a seller, if you're looking at registering in a specific member state or in a specific country, you need to really anticipate, look at the requirements, get the paperwork together, and make enough time to get your VAT number in time, because that will differ from one country to another. Another thing which is quite important as well for non-EU sellers is that from one member state to another, you might need a local agent to do the process on your behalf, basically. Some member states allow non-EU sellers to register directly for VAT in their country, whereas other member states are a lot more strict with this, and they would make you appoint a local representative, for example. And again, this will differ in every single member state. So that's something to bear in mind, because that could mean potentially additional cost as well. So I'll say that registration processes are definitely the first thing to look at when you know, with the differences.
Okay, yeah, so here we go with all the complications already. So, well, let me simplify this thing a bit, because obviously we'll look at more of the differences. But when we're talking about selling into the EU, traditionally Amazon sellers only have access to, it used to be the EU5, but now it's kind of a different EU5. So the UK, we're counting as presumably not a EU country. We're going to deal with Brexit separately because that's even more complex. But let's say Germany, France, Italy, Spain, and Netherlands. And for me, I'm putting it in the order of the sort of importance that it is for most people, because Germany is the second biggest Amazon market in the world by revenue, much bigger than the UK, like about 1.5, 1/3 times bigger. So let's focus on those countries. What sort of things can we expect, for example, the length of time to get registered there and the sort of basics of compliance? I'm not asking you to go through all of them in detail, but give us a bit of a flavor of Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Netherlands, or even just Germany, France, if we want to focus on the basics.
Yeah, of course. So again, if we look at, let's take France and Germany, for example. So as a non-EU seller, so as a US seller, for example, if you're looking at registering in those two countries, the requirements will be quite different. So for example, in France, the French government will make you appoint a local representative to be able to submit the paperwork, but also to file the VAT returns on a monthly basis. Whereas in Germany, the tax authorities is a lot more relaxed with this, and you don't necessarily have to appoint a local agent, for example. So the cost of registering for VAT locally will be different. In Germany, you wouldn't necessarily have to account for the cost of the service of an agent, for example, whereas in France, this can become quite expensive as well. So you would have to look at that. The filing frequencies can differ as well when it comes to filing your VAT returns on an ongoing basis. And again, you'll have to be vigilant with this. The deadlines will differ as well. So again, from one country to another, the deadline to file your VAT returns won't be the same. They are different in every single member state. So that's also something to bear in mind if you want to avoid getting penalized for late filing and things like that. So again, if we stick to the example with France and Germany, in terms of paperwork, for example, the forms are completely different. The form in Germany is in German, whereas the form in France is in French. So language skills might be quite relevant. If you need to register locally, you might want to ask somebody to help you, somebody specialized, you know, to help you out with this process, because it can be quite complex. And the time frames are already quite lengthy. We're talking about a few weeks in France and in Germany that can take up to, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks to get a VAT number through. So again, make sure you anticipate that and you ask somebody to help you out with this, because it can be quite a lengthy and complex process. The Germans like to ask questions as well when it comes to that registration. So they will ask you questions. Why do you want a VAT number? Why do you need a VAT number? They're not going to give you a VAT number if you don't need one. So you're going to have to make a case to obtain your VAT number. So again, that's something to bear in mind. Whereas other countries are a lot more relaxed and they will just issue VAT numbers really quickly, for example. So that's definitely something to keep in mind.
Wow, there's so much to go on. I have to say that I could generalize, because I do speak French and German. I've spent more time in Germany than France, but I have to say that France generally, they kind of quite a protectionist country, always have been, weirdly enough, for an EU kind of core country. They've always protected their own industry and marketplaces. So that kind of figures you need a local representative. Germany, in my experience, is they're incredibly bureaucratic and ask stupid questions. But then once you've got through those hoops on the other side of it, it's less protectionist. Would you say that's like generally been your experience as well?
Totally, actually. I kind of agree with that. That we've seen with different, and not only with VAT registrations, but with recovery claims and other VAT matters, that the French really insist on you having somebody local to help you out. Whereas in Germany, they're a lot more relaxed. And once you've got your number and you're compliant, they will be a bit more relaxed with that, if that makes sense.
And the reason why, the way I'm harping on those two countries, well, partly because I understand them, so I guess I can use them as an example of how to think this stuff through. But also, I think what's really important to me is thinking about this from an entrepreneurial perspective. And obviously, this stuff's complex. Now, the reason we have to discuss VAT legislation is because it's just something we have to get right, or it's a complete block to being able to sell at all. But nevertheless, we have to 80-20 this. I would suggest anyone listening, if you're not sure where to start with this stuff, just use common sense. The Germans have the second biggest marketplace in the world, apart from North America, and a currency that, relative to the dollar, if you're an American, or if you're importing from China, where they prefer dollars, in my experience, overwhelmingly, that has the currency, the euro, it has had a fairly stable relationship with the dollar. Now, COVID's doing weird stuff to everything, but if you look at the relationship of the pound to that, you need to take that into consideration, and Brexit uncertainty, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying is a simple version to anyone listening: if in doubt, try and sell in Germany, because they have a lot of money, they spend a lot of money on Amazon, and it's worth the hassle. And I guess at some point you've got to consider, if you're going to have to jump through a million hoops to sell in Spain, to sell like $300 or 300 euros a month of stuff, you may consider that's not worth it if you get a choice, right? So I'm just flagging up, this is not strictly a tax question, but it's a question of standing back from it and deciding to pick your fights, and try and pick your fight where there's something worth winning on the other side from the commercial point of view. And for me, Germany is always the highest choice. And whenever I've bullied my clients to go into Germany, even though it's a lot of hassle now, generally speaking, they come out of it with some extra sales that are really, really worth having. France, maybe it's a lot smaller, and then you've got to make your decisions. So just a small aside there. So let's get back to the VAT registration type stuff, or the VAT stuff. What are the other differences? We talked about registration processes. Non-EU sellers may have some different problems again. What are the other differences? What about the rates as well? Are they, you've already mentioned in our last episode, Alex, that somewhere like 17% can be the lowest. Do they all vary in every single country, Louise? Are they all different?
They do indeed. So again, the VAT directive, the overall overarching document and directives that member states should, you know, follow, gives a minimum VAT rate and a maximum VAT rate that has to be applied. So there is a range that you cannot, as a member state, you cannot rate below a certain amount and above a certain amount. But again, they vary from one country to another, whether it is the standard VAT rate or the reduced VAT rate. These vary quite a lot. For example, we've got 20% in the UK, but in Hungary, the standard VAT rate is 27%, as I'm aware. So this is something you've got to consider if you're trading in the EU. So not only the VAT rates differ, but it's also the items subject to reduce VAT rates or to a standard VAT rate. This will also differ from one country to another. So, for example, if an item is reduced rated in the UK, it doesn't mean that it will be in another member state in the EU. So again, as an online seller, you've got to be able to make this analysis and be able to look at your range of items, what VAT rate apply in this country, but also in this other. So it won't be the same in every country.
So tell me a bit more about this, the standard VAT and reduced VAT. How is that calculated? I understand it's different from country to country, but what's the basis of it? Is it item, like the HS code, your kind of classification of your product? Or is it based on amount that you sell? What's the sort of basis for the differences between those two?
That depends. That actually is different from one country to another. Again, for example, if we take France, for example, you would look at if the item qualifies as what is reduced VAT rates according to French legislation, to the French VAT tax code, it would say in the tax code basically which items qualify for reduced VAT rates. But for example, Poland has recently introduced a new VAT matrix. And the way the guidance that the Poland is giving currently is that to look at the commodity code in order to determine the VAT rate in Poland. Always the option to contact the local tax authorities with your commodity codes and the descriptions of your goods to know whether they should be reduced rated or standard rated. But again, you've got to be able to communicate in the local language. You've got to be able to communicate to the right office. So this is something, that can take you time as a seller, you know, you can always ask for the help in this, in such case. And this is something that we can do on behalf of our clients. We often do that actually, because it is worth getting it right, really, if you do want to avoid, you know, getting penalized. It's quite important because if the tax office realizes that you're not charging the correct VAT rates to your consumers, this isn't good for your customer experience, but also for their consumers' rights. So that's really important that you get it right in the first place.
And I also just wanted to add a pro tip as well. We talked last episode about the distance selling thresholds. Now, these thresholds, we talked about having, you know, 35,000 euros or 100,000 euros, depending on the country. Now, if a VAT rate is standard reduced rated or zero rated in a specific country, but then you cross over the threshold in the inbound country and now it's going up to standard rated, you need to really be checking these thresholds so that you make sure that you're charging the correct rate of VAT so you're not losing out on any of your profit margins. A great example of this is someone who might be selling, say, baby items here in the UK, and you're selling cross-border to customers currently in the UK. Baby items are zero rated. So you don't need to be charging any VAT on these products. You cross over a distance selling threshold, say into France, for example, you now need to be charging standard rated on your products. So you need to make sure that you're keeping up to date with you and checking your distance selling thresholds, because if you aren't charging the correct rates of VAT, it's just going to be eating away your profit margins.
Okay, so again, this sounds like at this point, it's a bit like with freight forwarding. At a certain point with exporting, importing, which even that is degree level stuff, like stock management, it's complex stuff. And this stuff is tax, is even more clearly complex. At this point, my advice to everyone is just get on the phone to an expert. So I'll just flag up, even though we're halfway through the episode, go to amazingfba.com/simplyVAT if you want to be sent straight to a place to book in a consultation with these guys. Because very clearly, I don't want to be learning the Hungarian phrase for VAT, reduced VAT, and trying to phone up the Hungarian tax office. Not, I suspect that Hungary is relevant to Amazon sellers in Europe yet, and I'm going to keep it focused on Amazon sellers for simplicity. I guess Poland, however, is going to be relevant, right? Because if you're selling into Germany, Poland is where a lot of the fulfillment centers for Amazon warehouses are, because it's cheap labor, they're really hard workers, and it's very near Germany, right? So you need to be aware, just because you're only selling into UK, Germany, France, Italy, Spain, and Netherlands, those are the six marketplace countries, that doesn't mean that that's where your stock is limited to be stored. So how does that work, by the way? Can we even address that one for a minute? If you're selling into an EU country, and unknown to you, Amazon has moved stuff into another EU country, how do we deal with that situation in terms of VAT?
I would say that it's best to, you know, expect the worst and hope for the best. And when I say that, I mean, you should be accounting for the highest rate of VAT in your product margins. And the highest one as part of the Amazon, say, Pan-EU program is Poland at 23% VAT. So as long as you're, you know, including 23% VAT, potential VAT in your product margins, then you would be making sure that you are encompassing across all of the different EU markets. It doesn't matter where Amazon is going to be sending your products from. So yeah, I would say include the 23%, and your goods could be coming from somewhere like Germany, where it's at 19%. And, you know, at that point, you would just get the extra 4% to yourself. You wouldn't need to pay that over to the tax authorities. But it's always best to account for the highest rate, just so you can make sure that you're not losing any of your profit margins.
Okay, defensive sort of margin planning. That's very, very wise. So let's just try and nail this down. It's a bit of an Amazon-specific question. But so the Amazon, which countries you could end up involved with is my question. So we've got the, obviously, UK for now. We'll talk about that. Brexit and a separate issue. Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Netherlands. Those are the marketplace countries, unless I've missed one. So we've mentioned Poland. Are there any other countries that Amazon stock may end up stored in with a VAT implication?
Also, Czech Republic as well. So at the moment, Amazon doesn't have any warehouses in the Netherlands. So there's no actual trigger unless you cross over the distance selling threshold in the Netherlands, or if you're using your own 3PL in the Netherlands. The other place that's actually part of the Pan-EU program is the Czech Republic. And that is, again, it's not a main marketplace where Amazon is actually selling their goods. It's much like Poland, where they're fulfilling items, you know, probably at a much cheaper labor cost into, say, the likes of Germany. And yeah, they have a VAT rate of 21%. So you'd need to make sure, again, it's much higher than Germany. So if you're holding your stock, part of the Pan-EU program could be in any of the 7 countries, the 5 main markets, plus Poland and Czech Republic, and you need to be prepared that your goods can go from any of those countries to any other countries.
Wow. So it's pleasing to see that however many decades into the European Union and development of the European sort of so-called free trade zone, that the trade does not seem to be very free. So well done, EU. But still, we just need to know about it. We can't change it. So it's interesting point also that weirdly, just to clarify the difference between a marketplace, i.e. where you can buy stuff and where the end consumer lives, and the actual stock holding, which seems to be the main sort of trigger for stuff. The Netherlands doesn't even have an FC warehouse, from what you said, which is kind of crazy. But of course, it's very small and it's very geographically near Germany and France. But Poland and the Czech Republic do not have Amazon marketplaces, but you can hold stock there. So I'm just flagging that up for people to get their heads around. And then we better move on. So quick one to you, Louise. You mentioned this before, but tell me about compliance. I mean, it's so complicated in a practical sense. Do we really have to comply with all of this complicated stuff? Can we just kind of fudge some of this?
No, you do have to comply with it, I'm afraid. And I would say don't try to not comply with it, because the tax authorities will find you and they will make sure you comply with this. The EU, you have to understand that the EU is really, really keen to stop fraud and to stop non-compliant sellers in the EU, because with the rise of e-commerce and the boom of e-commerce and marketplaces, there's so much VAT that isn't being collected. And as a result, the European Commission is currently developing new tools, new cooperative agreements between member states to be able to track down non-compliant sellers and to make them comply with their VAT obligations. So it's really important that you look into this and you're on top of your obligations if you want to be continuing to trade freely across the EU. There are upcoming major changes happening across the EU as well when it comes to selling on a marketplace as well. And again, I would say as a seller, you should really keep an eye on those. And if you're unsure, get in touch and, you know, we'll be happy to talk you through, because it's so important. The EU is such a large market. It's such an opportunity, a great opportunity to be able to sell in this market. And, you know, getting your VAT wrong and missing out on this is just not worth it. So keep an eye on your VAT obligations, because the tax authorities are getting more and more efficient as, you know, catching non-compliant sellers, really.
That does make sense. It's a sad truth we've got to deal with. I partly mentioned that because for a while, for example, UK-based sellers were pretty vague about dealing with registering for sales tax in the USA. And even now, frankly, some are just waiting to see how it shakes down. I guess that we're not really dealing with that situation with VAT. And I just wanted to flag that up as a sort of reality check, that it's kind of a bit like asking Turkish to vote for Christmas. Of course, a VAT expert on a live broadcast could not possibly say don't comply with VAT. But the reality is that you really can't get away with it these days, which, by the way, I would argue is a good thing in many ways, because one of the problems we've seen as Amazon sellers is Chinese-based factories not registering for VAT and therefore selling at very low rates, which nobody can compete with in the European Union marketplaces and Amazon. And the fact that everyone's clamping down on that should actually make it a level playing field for European or American sellers. So actually, overall, it could even benefit us. But anyway, we don't get to say about this, but we do get to say what we do with our own businesses. That brings me to another question, which I'm not going to go kind of blow by blow, country by country, because we'll be here for 10, 20, 30 hours. But tell me a bit about the other side of the equation, not where you're selling or where your consumers are, but where the business is based. Is VAT registration very different for Americans, Europeans, and I guess I'd have to say UK-based businesses as a separate entity? Are there different processes? Are there different obligations there?
Yes, absolutely. So at the moment, the process to VAT register and the requirements to VAT register in the pan-EU countries, they will differ whether you are a business established within the EU or if you are a business established outside of the EU, such as the US, for example, and in the future, the UK. So again, that is something that you've got to bear in mind when you're looking at registering, because not only the process will be different, but as we said earlier, you might be required to appoint a local agent if you are not established in the EU. And that can mean additional costs, potentially. So you've got to bear that in mind. But also the documents that could be required will be different. For example, I know from experience that some US sellers can struggle to provide the correct documentation. So that's something that an expert can help you with as well. So what kind of document you can provide locally. In the EU, we've got some equivalences and the tax authorities are used to seeing other EU documents, you know, a French registration document or Spanish, you know, status and things like that. So the EU tax authorities are used to those. But sometimes with US companies and non-EU companies, we've seen in the past that it can be a bit tricky. You might need to get, you know, official translations, for example. But that's something that, you know, an agent or somebody specialized could help you with, because there are significant differences for EU and non-EU sellers.
Which brings me to another obvious question, which is it sometimes a better idea for US-based citizens or individual person to try to register a company within the European Union rather than have a US-based entity of whatever kind? And the US has like a spaghetti soup of legal entities, as LLCs, Inc., you know, corps, Delaware corporations. Is it going to be easier to register a company in the EU? I do realize this implies a knowledge of company law, and I expect you to be lawyers, but from a practical point of view, what have you seen in that regard?
As you said, we're not law advisors or anything, but I suppose if you had a EU branch business, you would be able to benefit from some benefits that EU-based business have, such as the distance selling thresholds, but also upcoming simplifications across the EU. So it could be interesting to look at that and benefit from the single market and customs union the same way as an EU-based business would benefit from. So that's something that in the future, for example, UK sellers could look into if they want to continue trading in the EU, potentially. I'd say it could make sense from a VAT perspective, but I don't know if, Alex, you've got any opinion on that?
All I would add is, as a non-EU-based business at the moment, you do require fiscal representation in specific EU countries. These fiscal representatives are jointly liable for the VAT owed by a non-EU-based business. So as a non-EU business, these could incur extra fees or bank guarantees in order to, you know, use these local fiscal representatives to take on the risk of being liable for the VAT owed by your company. Now, as an EU business, you wouldn't require these fiscal representatives. So I would really look into, or, you know, if you're starting to expand into Europe, look into what your expansion plans are. Plan a little bit into the future, or even, you know, start with the distance selling thresholds and then see, you know, are your products really taking off in Europe? And if they are, then maybe it is worth setting up an EU company, because, you know, overall your cost of compliance could be a lot lower than what it would be, say, having to VAT register with a load of fiscal representatives in multiple different EU member states. But it really just depends on your expansion plans, your company. There's no blanket rule at all. You know, it's up to you and what you sell and kind of your plans to the future as well.
That's a very good nuanced response. What I would just say again, what's interesting to me is, again, as I try and I suppose I'd sort of do general business advice rather than being a specialist in a particular area. And I do the same as a podcast host. And I guess what strikes me is this, that as the CEO of your business, whether it's just you and your cat or whether it's like a team of 20 or 30 people or whatever it may be, your responsibility is strategy, I think, ultimately, which is why I come back to strategy. This is a very technical area, but I think what's interesting to me is this. Tax strategy sounds like something for big corporations. Company formation and sort of legal wrapper strategy sounds like something very fancy for big corporations. And people tend to talk to their accountants, you know, after a couple of years in business, in their seriousness, and to lawyers a few years down the line. I would say this. It seems to me that if you're an outside EU business, which will apply to UK-based sellers, sadly, within a few short months, as you said, Louise, 4 months to go. That's kind of crazy soon. So I'm glad we're having this conversation now. That suddenly it seems to me that tax planning and tax awareness and corporation sort of corporate law and the ramifications of that aren't a side issue, aren't a way of we'll do this when we get big. It seems to be a core part of our strategy now. So that's what strikes me as the sort of quasi outsider of the tax specialist thing, but the insider is trying to run businesses in this situation. So I really think, again, like I'm just to put it simply, like the best advice I can give is go get some advice from these guys. amazingfba.com/simplyVAT. So I presume that you can consult with people from anywhere in the world who want to sell in the EU. Is that a fair summary, guys?
Exactly. And I think the key thing to take away is you don't know what you don't know until you know it. So the best thing to do is to talk to someone who does know. You know, I spoke to a UK business who was just starting out the other day, and, you know, she was preparing her first shipment into the UK. And I think I might have overwhelmed her a bit with the VAT obligations, but, you know, I also helped her start planning for the future because of Brexit coming in the next few months and things that people wouldn't actually think about at the first point of thought, you know, from a VAT perspective. Like you just said, I think it's really important to have that conversation just with someone, you know, like you can call us up for a 30-minute free consultation and we can talk that through with you and make sure that you are prepared for any obstacles that might come in your way. Because, again, you don't know what you don't know until you know what's coming at you.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. As I said in the previous episode, but I'm going to say it again because I think it's just shown so true. It's not the stuff you think you know that's going to kill you, or the stuff you know you don't know because you know that's a danger area. It's the stuff you think you know that is wrong. That's the even worse stuff. So if you think you understand VAT, from my experience of this conversation and other ones like it with other sellers, you probably don't. And so I would suggest strongly you get in touch. And that's just, I can't say how important this stuff is. The other thing to say is if you look at your profit and loss and if you're financially literate, you'll know that tax is probably your biggest single expense. It might possibly be outweighed by the cost of goods sold, but only just. So tax planning, again, it's not an add-on. It's a core part of your business strategy. So pick the phone up, or rather, you know, get through amazingfba.com/simplyVAT and get in touch with these guys. And many, many thanks. Louise, thank you for taking us on a bit of a guided tour around this confusing world of VAT variations around the EU. Next up is that all important and really exciting topic that everyone in Britain loves to talk about, which is Brexit. We've got to talk about it, but for now, I just want to say big thank you guys for some really helpful advice.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us. That was great. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks so much for listening to the 10K Collective podcast, part of the family of Amazing FBA podcasts. Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-Commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by yours truly and Jason Miles, multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Unami's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you're the owner of a thriving online business and you want to become the best e-commerce leader you can be, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many topics, go to www.theecommerceleader.com.